Can we get much higher?
So high.
Oh, so high. Oh, high. Nick Del Santo.
Good
lovely
afternoon.
To see you.
Always lovely to see you, Jack. How are you? Had a nice weekend?
Excellent.
Good.
Saw a couple of interesting games of footy for different reasons. One that we both saw, the Giants in North Melbourne yesterday.
Yes.
And St Kilda, which I reckon Saints fans and Alan Richardson, about halfway through the second quarter, would have thought, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. And yeah. They just, eventually they overran the Suns.
It's probably
the biggest issue the Suns have got, because they've got so many injuries at the moment, is that they're not finishing games. And
yep.
I mean, that was there to be won on the weekend. And unfortunately, they ran out of steam.
They did. Let's touch on that game. First of all, really difficult to watch. I mean, it was up in Townsville, and I only hope that the conditions were worse than what it looked like on TV. Hopefully it was hotter, so therefore the players were more fatigued. I'm hoping the ball was like a bar of soap, which might explain some of the disposal. And I don't say this lightly, and I don't mean this to be really rude, but it may come across. That's not AFL standard. That performance from both teams for the majority of the game is not the standard that we expect, and a lot of people accept, for the most elite competition of AFL football in the country. It just, the amount of fumbles and dropped marks and poor kicks. And I've been harping on this for quite a while when I refer just simply to disposal.
It's a massive bugbear of yours, isn't it?
It staggers me. It absolutely staggers me. And I think there's enough of the general public on board. And we speak about the state of the game. We reference umpires. We reference rule changes and all that comes with it. We speak a lot about the structures and the setups that the coaches are doing to change the game. And they receive a lot of the blame. I still think the players need to take a huge responsibility for their own career. That if you're a tradie and your responsibility is to hammer a nail in and make sure it goes straight every time so the house doesn't fall apart, then that's your job.
Mm.
At AFL level, it is your job and your responsibility to hit, let's just make it the simple targets, 20-metre kicks. I'm still baffled by the amount of turnovers on short kicks. One, the execution and the actual fundamental skill that isn't done properly. But also the decision-making, that you can't see a player that can intercept that ball over that particular distance. Put that all together, that game was hard to watch.
It was very, very hard to watch. Hey, we're going to talk about the Giants soon, because we both saw a lot that we liked yesterday. I want to start by talking about the role of the tagger with you, Del.
Love to.
Because it's back. Yes. It goes through ebbs and flows, the tagger. For a while, it's a very important position. Then for a while, they're sort of viewed as almost second-class citizens, the tagger,
yes.
And they're a pest.
Yes.
The tagger's back in a big way, though. And Matt DeBoer, like North Melbourne went out of their way to make Matt DeBoer's life difficult yesterday, and he's pretty sore as a result, and he's got a shoulder issue to work through, and he copped a couple of knocks through the game. But Dylan Clark, his performances have been highlighted the last couple of weeks. He did a good job on Paddy Cripps.
Superb job on Cripps.
Took Jager O'Meara apart on Friday night, I thought.
Yes.
Is it back?
I think it never should have left.
Yeah.
And before we get away from this, I'd love you to do a callback at some stage to ask the people, would you love to have a tagger in your team? Because the counter argument is, we don't want people negating the best players in the competition. We want to see Patrick Cripps running free. We want to see Ben Cunnington yesterday in his 200th game doing what he does really good. That's what we want to go to the game and watch. But on the flip side, if your team had a tagger that could negate the opposition's best mid, would you want that as a supporter?
If I was a North Melbourne supporter, and it was more than just one player, like I thought Canelio was terrific, Taranto terrific, Hopper terrific, their midfield ran riot, the Giants.
Yes.
But if Ben Jacobs was available yesterday for North Melbourne, or someone similar who could play that stopping role,
yep.
You can't tell me, and I'm happy to be told different, 1300 736 736, you can't tell me that as a North Melbourne fan, you would have loved for someone to lock down on Josh Kelly yesterday.
Oh, good luck. First of all, good luck.
He was phenomenal.
He's a delight to watch, isn't he? You go to the football to watch really good players. I go to the football, and often it's a forward for obvious reasons. I go to watch Josh Kelly. He's just a pleasure to watch. You feel good watching him. It's just
you actually
smooth.
Do. Yeah.
Yep. I'm completely with you on that particular one. Going back to taggers. So you've spoken about Dylan Clark. He had Cripps, then he had O'Meara on the weekend. Matty DeBoer's done multiple jobs. He went to Ben Cunnington yesterday, averaging 29-odd disposals. The previous week, Ben Cunnington's had 14 clearances.
Mm.
And I didn't know if that tag was going to work yesterday, because Ben Cunnington, the way that he plays, he's pretty much one-on-one at every stoppage anyway. Was anyone going to stop him from what he does? Well, yes, you can tag Ben Cunnington. You can tag Patrick Cripps. I want to go back 2 weeks and reference Ed Curnow.
Yep.
They played the Brisbane Lions. Lachie Neal has 26, I think it was, 25-26 in the first half. Gets tagged in the second half. They changed that, the Blues. He has 6 for the rest of the game. Anyone can be tagged. I would only hope in this competition that we say is a copycat league. We follow what the best teams do. We find trends and we try and mimic it. That if any club has someone that can tag, do it. Why would you ever want the opposition's best midfielder?
I can't find a reason why.
There would never be a better time in the competition to come in as a young player, to find your feet in the way that the game's currently played, or to be an elite midfielder in the competition to play AFL football right now.
It's an interesting point you touch on, and I want to follow that up. Just before we do that, Craig's in Montrose, wants to join what we're chatting about here with Taggers. G'day, Craig.
Good morning, guys, and Nicky Dell. How are you, boys?
Very good, thank you.
Good. Yeah, look, I don't mind the Taggers. I mean, we Carlton benefited from it on the weekend, obviously the last 2 weekends, with Kurnow going to Lachie Neal and then shutting Bontempelli out a little bit in the third quarter. So, you know, the Taggers are fine, but what annoys me with the Taggers is the blatant cheating and the blatant holding and stoppages. I mean, there's 3 umpires now, and this has happened to Patrick Cripps all year. He gets blatantly held at every centre, not the centre bouncer so much, but at every ball up around the ground. He's like physically held. I mean, yeah. If there's 3 umpires, you've got to pick it up with your Taggers. I mean, I don't mind Taggers, but just stop blokes from cheating.
And that's realistically, Craig, and thanks for your call, that's the umpire's job. A tagger or a person who's trying to play a negating role is always going to try and exploit things to the absolute limit.
But it's also everybody in team defence.
True.
Anyone that is defending at that particular time, and I'm with you, I think the tagger, and as a midfielder, you do whatever you can and then you find that line. So you speak about the taggers. If they were to call that very early, being the umpires, to say that's a holding free kick or you're scrapping him or whatever it may be, that's the new line for that particular game. That's the standard. So then you know as the tagger that you come back a little bit. But you're right. I think that part's the umpire's responsibility. But I appreciate that call that you do think the taggers still have a role in the game.
So then I was thinking about this last night. So you get a situation like a Matt DeBoer or a Dylan Clark where they – whether you view taggers to be a negative or a positive, that they had an influence on the results on the weekend. So Clark had a major influence on Essendon winning because he negated their best midfielder.
Yes.
Likewise for Matt DeBoer yesterday with Ben Cunnington. Clubs don't traditionally draft taggers. Taggers are moulded over time, aren't they? All the names that we've spoken about, none of them were ever drafted as a tagger. And
no.
You can even go back to Cameron Ling. He was a forward when he got drafted. Clint Jones, a teammate of yours, was a ball-winning magnet in WA.
Yep.
So the role gets moulded over time. So I guess my question to you is, is it not that hard? Like, can you learn to tag pretty quickly? Or is there going to come a point where a club will look at a 17-year-old who's decided, you know, my best passage through to play footy at the top level will be to be a defensive midfielder?
Mm.
Will there come a point where where clubs will start drafting these sorts of players?
So many good questions that come out of that question from you there, Jake. First of all, I'll say I don't think the clubs would ever have the courage to draft a tagger.
Why?
I think they think that they can mould them. I don't think it would look good that they've gone out specifically to find someone to draft someone that doesn't find the football, that doesn't.
But don't they pay it back to the team in other ways?
Please don't take this the wrong way. I think there's a role for it, and I think that there's a possibility that they could in the future. You go through some of the great taggers of the last 20-odd years. You put Kane Corns in that category. Ryan Crowley was fantastic for a while. I played with Clint Jones. You go to Damien Peverill,
mm-hmm.
Paul Lecuria, Brett Kirk, some of the great taggers. None of them were drafted because they were really good at negating the opposition's best midfielder. Their best chance of playing regular senior football was to play that role. If they didn't play it, I wouldn't be surprised if they probably weren't getting a game. Well, then they evolve and then start finding the football themselves. I don't see how a recruiting department would have the courage and then the senior decision makers, senior coach, football admin would say, yep, let's go back to an under 17-year-old or a 17-year-old kid who's averaging 10 touches a game, but geez, he's disciplined and plays his role.
And we don't see those players often, Del, because in NAB League and other junior competitions that are pathways, you're almost encouraged not to tag, to give the players the best chance to shine.
Is that a rule or it's almost an unspoken rule, isn't it?
I think it's a gentleman's kind of agreement in many ways.
You're right. As we work through the scenarios, does that mean that the ability to tag is simple? Is it?
Well, this is what I'm trying to work out.
You can teach it.
Yeah.
I'll give you the Ben Jacobs example, and it has popped up on the questions is where he's at. So I'd love to reference what's in today's Herald Sun about Ben Jacobs. I think there was a particular game, I reckon he had 30-odd possessions off the top of my head. He was playing half-back flank, obviously at the Kangas, and got dropped. Now, 30 possessions is a really good day out, but your responsibility is to defend. And Brad Scott and the coaching staff at that time felt he hadn't played his role. So he actually got dropped off the back of a really high possession game. But he was quickly told, if you want to play in this team, you need to find a new role, and this is where we can see you doing it. Came back in 2 weeks later, and for the back half of that year, I reckon off the top of my head, 2014 or 15 it might have been, I think he came top eight in the best and fairest almost off 11 games. It was that significant and that important. So he'd gone from a teammate you thought, oh, a bit wishy-washy, chases the football, doesn't do his primary role to defend. Within a fortnight, being valued, respected, appreciated, and internally loved.
And valued.
And valued, absolutely.
Hence the best and fairest. Yeah. Dal's here thanks to McCafe Coffee. McCafe Coffee are our partner just downstairs now for us. Dal's got his hands on a smooth barista-made coffee from McCafe, available 24/7. Steve's on the road. Steve, thanks for your call.
Gentlemen, I think you might actually be doing Matt DeBoer a bit of a disservice. He's not just a tagger. He's actually winning more of the ball than his opposition and occasionally getting forward and sneaking a goal.
Absolutely, yep. And an SMS has just come through. The Courier got 40 touches in a final. Not bad for a tagger. Now, that was part of the evolution. So he started
off as a
negator, and then they have the ability to go find the football themselves. So we're not trying to take away anything from their football or winning ability. And ultimately, that's why they were drafted, that they find the football.
Yep.
But if they're going to get regular senior games to start with, they need to go to the opposition's best mid. Now, Matt DeBoer, the beauty of tagging someone, and this is the other way that you can put it as a learning experience for a younger player, the best players will take you to the football anyway. So Matt DeBoer plays on the opposition's best midfielder, Ben Cunnington. You know where Ben Cunnington is going to be every stoppage? Right underneath Todd Goldstein's hands, right under Mumford's hands yesterday. So Matt DeBoer's there anyway. Then it's a one-on-one battle. Who wins that one-on-one contest? And Matt DeBoer's really good at one-on-ones as well. Then you challenge the opposition off the back of that. You challenge the spread of Ben Cunnington. GWS wins the footy. Are you going to chase me now? Because I'm going to work away from this stoppage and get my hands on it to make them second guess their self.
I love this one, Dal. Your point's a very good one. And I just love this one. That's the very top text that we've just got. 0433 98 11 16. Taggers might get drafted in mid-season drafts if a player is doing a good job negating at second tier level. So
very
again,
good message.
North Melbourne is the prime example here because Ben Jacobs, we're hearing, and Jay Clark reporting the Herald Sun today that has got an issue involving sinusitis and concussion-like symptoms that no one can get to the bottom of. So Ben Jacobs is not going to be around for the foreseeable future. Is that something that clubs would consider in years to come?
I think that's a really good example. I hadn't thought that far through because, as we've said, it's really difficult for a 17-year-old. Some comps don't allow it anyway in junior development systems. But that is a good example. If you feel that mid-year, that your midfielders, maybe you just need an extra in there just to balance out your midfield, just to negate. That's a good one. That could be a specific purpose for someone to come in and have a role that is simplistic, that hasn't been a part of the club previously.
And it's a skill set that you don't have at the moment. More on this very shortly. More of your calls too. 1300 736 736. Sam, Phil and Tim will come to you on the other side of the break. Dal's here for McCafe. If you need a delicious barista-made coffee right now, McCafe has got you covered. And the best part about it, they are open 24/7. Jack Everin filling in for Andy Maher today. Nick Del Santo's here for the first hour. We're going to start to roll through some stop-and-go Del Santo very shortly as well. It's all thanks to Subaru for end-of-year financial. Subaru offers search Subaru Melbourne. We've been talking the role of the tagger, Del, because we think it's back in.
Yeah.
It's gone through stages, but we think it's back in a big way.
The other one which would be interesting and to get the listeners to join in because they probably know their list better, who at your club could mould into a tagger? If you don't have a genuine Matt DeBoer right now or you don't have a Dylan Clark or you don't have an Ed Koerner that can do it, who could change? Who's accessible enough that you could say, well, you're not doing enough in your current role or you're playing seconds that we might need you to tweak your role? Who would that particular person do? And who you need to have trust. Now, what you touched on before is, can you mould these players? I think we're understating the mental capacity of how challenging that particular part is.
And the discipline element too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be able to physically run 15-odd Ks a game, as the most good midfielders will do. But then the ability, the concentration, the discipline to not chase the football, to play your role for 2 hours of footy for the betterment of the team. You don't get many accolades, and I know we're speaking about Matt DeBoer, but this has been going for quite a while. But the team gets the result.
Mm.
The team get the midfielders all look better as a result. So Josh Kelly looks great yesterday. Kinnealy looks good. Taranto, Hopper, all these guys get heaps of the footy. But Matt DeBoer did a damn good job too.
And he wins his own ball. That's what we've spoken about with the evolution of the tagger, if you still want to use that role, is that they're defensive, but they still help the other way
the
too.
The accountable midfielder.
I like that one.
The accountable midfielder.
It's a weekend for name tags and for expanded titles, isn't it?
It is.
Put that one on your LinkedIn account. Sam's in Noble Park. G'day, Sam.
G'day, Jack. How are you?
Good.
Good. That's good. Nick, I just want to say great start to the show, man. The three things you mentioned were actually spot on. Firstly, with the efficiency, not just that game, but in general, I think you can win games if you actually have proper efficiency of the football. You don't need really that much game plan. If you can actually kick or handball the thing properly, you win half the games. But in terms of the tagger role, yes, you would definitely should have a tagger in your team. So I go for Collingwood. I think it's always good to have something in your kick bag just for the odd occasion. As long as what you guys have said, that they are accountable for not just stopping the other person, but also doing their role and probably doing it better. So yeah, I definitely think taggers have to stay. They do a really good job. They're probably very, very underrated, because the some things they can do is actually very affordable for sure.
Thank you very much for your call, Sam. Some really good points. Now, you follow, Sam follows the
Collingwood
Pies.
Yeah.
I look at Levi Greenwood.
Yes.
And played with him at North Melbourne, came second or third in a best and fairest as a tagger.
Yep.
Was accountable, got his own football as well, highly respected and appreciated at the Kangas, goes to the Pies. And I must admit, I've been surprised that he hasn't played that role more in that particular team. He's now playing halfback as a genuine halfback, a bit more of a shutdown sort of role as a halfback flanker. And maybe he's been squeezed out of the midfield because they've got so many good midfielders. I think we just, you know, where's Beams going to play? Where does Pendlebury play if you're going to be bringing in Levi Greenwood? But I still think there's a role for him as a accountable midfielder.
I think they sometimes, seems like with Levi Greenwood, they set him for certain types of players.
Well, he only goes to
doesn't
Selwood.
Doesn't have a role every week.
He goes to Selwood.
Yeah.
And I reckon there's one other off the, is it Dusty? He goes to Selwood and Dusty whenever those two, when they play each other. But outside of that, he just plays a role in the back line.
He's got victims that he likes to match up against all the time. Phil's in Hoppers Crossing. Hello, Phil.
Jack, good afternoon, mate.
Nice to talk to you, mate.
And to you too, Nick. Just two or three points, buddy. First of all, I suppose, you know, you guys talking about Ben Jacobs, look, at times his games have probably been just as or more important than someone who is actually getting, you know, 30 or 35 touches or kicking two or three goals. So we've really, really missed him. You know, the other point you're talking about, perhaps a midfielder being accountable, somebody from North Melbourne sort of comes to mind to me would possibly be Jed Anderson.
Well, yep. He's tough enough.
You know, he's fairly hard at the ball. He's fairly tough. So he's someone that sort of springs to mind to me.
It works. I saw a couple of tackles yesterday with Jed Anderson, Dell. There was one that he looked like one of those bulls raging through the streets of Pamplona, ready to iron out a tourist.
He
just mowed him down yesterday.
He likes making body contact,
he does.
Jed. And it's either the shoulder during a tackle or he just goes for the shirt front. But that was a really willing game yesterday. And I just want to touch on one thing, which I was really pleased on behalf of the Giants yesterday. They've been beaten up a little bit by the Kangas for a period of time. Haven't had a lot of success win-loss ratio, but also in the contest, I thought that was the biggest winner out of the weekend. I know Freo are fantastic and they're progressing really well, sitting 7-5 in sixth position. But I think sometimes we get so mesmerised with the Giants' ball use and we speak about this tsunami and how fast and electrifying they are off the half-back line and they kick goals. None of that happens if they're not hard at the contest. And I think we need to give them more respect and appreciation for what they're doing. And they took it up to the Kangas. They got belted around early in some great one-on-one hits. Jack Zeeble runs through Toby Green in the first couple of minutes. I think it was Kane Turner knocks Hopper on his backside in the first quarter. There was some great knocks. They embraced it all. They gave it back at the right time and ultimately run away with a good win. I thought that was really significant about this team that we brand outside, classy, flashy, talented. They're doing all the hard stuff as well.
Funny you mention that, because the Giants are where we're going to start with stop and go Del Santo on the other side of this. It's like you've almost read the run sheet or something, Del. Incredible by you. Let's catch up with the latest news from Steph and more with Nick Del Santo after this. Did you pick this one?
This song?
Yeah. Burning Ring of Fire.
I was going to say Country and Western. What song was this? I have heard of that.
Nick Del Santo is here for Kaiser, K-I-E-S-E-R, for your half-price physio assessments. Visit kieser.com.au before June 30. Why don't we start with stop and go, Del Santo?
I'd love to.
Del, we'll push through a couple of these, and I reckon there's a couple that you'll just let go through to the keeper. But on the Giants, we both saw them yesterday. Is there still a perception that the Giants are an outside team?
Yes. And we sort of just alluded to that, and I apologise for taking away from this question. Yes, I think there is. Let's put it in context, their season so far. They're sitting 9-4, 9 wins, 4 losses. 7 of them have been away from home, and another 2 have been home games played out of Canberra. So 9 of 13 games they've travelled. That's an enormous workload, and that takes a toll on the players. So I think you need to give them, not a pass, but just a little bit more appreciation of their first 13 weeks, about how significant it's been, including 2 travels. They were in Adelaide last week, and then they're down in Tassie this week. So it all adds up. Yes, just to go back over what I touched on, I think because of the foot skills of, I'm a massive fan of Kelly. I love Whitfield's ball use. You put in Heath Shaw, Williams, all these guys. I think we get mesmerised as football lovers about the beauty of these players. But without the grunt and the contested possession work, I think Mumford's needs to be appreciated. We watched him yesterday. That poor bugger can't run.
Yes. He's going up and down at the moment.
He's got a knee that does not work.
He's on a treadmill.
Oh, the poor thing. Oh, I actually felt sorry for him at times. There was a particular turnover right in front of me, Jack, and he had to defend, and he couldn't go laterally to put pressure on the ball carrier. Yeah. Hence why when he goes straight, he just keeps going until, you know, he's like the Queen Mary. Just be, like,
the train's on the tracks and it's not stopping.
He's not coming around.
Yep.
But yes, I think we need to appreciate the way that they play their football against North Melbourne, who are competitive and physical.
Yeah, they could have folded up their tents yesterday and just said, look, it wasn't our day. It was cold. It was North were too strong.
It was freezing.
They didn't do that. They were tough. Their next 4 weeks, they got the bye this week, but it's a...
coming a great time.
Probably a shorter bye, though. It's only a 9-day break or something that they get because of the way that the next few rounds are structured. They play next Thursday night against Essendon.
Yes.
In Melbourne. So at Marvel Stadium.
Yeah. That's going to be a great test.
Be a ripping game.
For both. I think that's significant for the Bombers, who play the Eagles this Thursday night
and then
go straight into another Thursday night. That'll answer a lot of questions.
Then they've got the Lions at home.
You'd expect that to be a win.
Richmond at the MCG.
Huge game. This is going to be a great month of football for them.
Collingwood at home. Oh. That game is going to be, that's the twilight game on the Saturday. Like if you could put that anywhere, that would be Friday night footy.
Is this their year? Is this in regards to this next month will sum up their season? Is this make or break?
The last game of that block of 5 is Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval.
Difficult game. Okay, so they've got 5 weeks. They've got the bye this week. They get 4 days off, I think it is, starting today. They're back on deck later this week at the football club because they've got the Thursday night game. Oh, you don't want to ever look too far ahead when you're playing, you know, at a football club. You don't speak about 5 week blocks. You often just focus on what's right in front of you. That is significant. I hope they recognise the possibility and the opportunities over the next 5.
They're 9-4.
Yep.
Lockie Whitfield not too far away from returning. And he is significant to that team. So the fact they're winning without him is good as well.
Yep.
If they're 9-4 and of that next 4-game block, Del, that we just, or 5-game block, sorry. If they win 3 and drop 2, let's just say that they go better than 50-50. Yep. 3-2.
12-6.
12-6 with 7 rounds to go. They're in it up to their eyeballs. Yep. They're in it up to their eyeballs now.
Toby Green gets the continuity that you hope that he gets. He was very, very good yesterday. But it just, on top of all that, and I just touched on the word continuity, that is one thing they haven't had for 3 years. The same players playing regularly leading into a finals campaign.
Can I just break the rules of stop and go Del Santo a fraction here?
Of course you
can. Andy's not here, so bugger it. I'll do what I like.
It's your show.
Gary would call this an ancillary question on breakfast. I'll ask you an ancillary question. Sure. If Shane Mumford is starting to show the signs of someone who hasn't played for a year and has played pretty much every game and he's a bit sore and not turning well.
Very sore, getting treated weekly.
Would you give him the next 3 weeks off? Or 2 weeks, or do you know what I mean? Would you give him a block now?
Do you know what I do?
With a view to what's coming.
It's a great idea, and I think it's worth a conversation. Dawson Simpson, I think, is ready to go.
He's playing all right in the NFL.
I'd have the conversation with Shane, because some players love the continuity of week-in, week-out preparation, that actually having 3 weeks off could actually hinder their season.
Yeah.
Now, I know he's had a year off, he's had injuries, he's got a sore knee at the moment, all those things that come into it. If you were to go down that path, which I'm not saying it's the wrong thing. I think it needs to be had a conversation with Shane as a senior player, but that would also give him enough time on the back end to build into finals.
Yes,
so it'd still give him, four to five weeks to lead into it.
Yep.
Knowing that it's probably taking him another 2 to 3 to really get his match fitness going again. That might be round 19, round 20, 2 really good weeks of football. Finals. But I think that conversation should be had with him as well. Just ask him about how he wants to go about it.
Stop and go, Del Santo. I think I know which way you'll go with this one. Ben Stratton should get a week for stomping and another week for pinching.
Yes, stop. Yes and yes. So much said. I feel like it's almost been done to death, this conversation, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The bit I was really there was a couple of things I was disappointed in. As the captain of a football club and being a senior player and aware of what you can and can't do, to be a premeditated idea to come in and put someone off their game from that style, I was disappointed in, to then come out the next day and say it's a bad look for the game. I think Ben would have been well aware that what it would have looked like Friday morning, Friday afternoon, 10 minutes before the game when he had this tactic to do it. He did a similar thing 2 weeks earlier with Charlie Cameron, and I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm going to go back over and have a look, that he did a similar thing against Toby Green when they played earlier in the year.
Yep.
So it was a consistent theme. I've heard this morning that Clarko should be held accountable as well and take some responsibility for not nipping it in the bud. Nah. Don't pass the buck. It is on the player. And I was a massive fan of players doing whatever it took to win. I love those sort of players as teammates, but there's also a line. And you know what you can and can't do. I think the stomp really worried me. That had the possibility to cause...
That was just dumb.
That's broken bones.
Like
that's a bit... Yeah, that was a bit vicious. But yeah, I think there needs to be at least some time off, unfortunately.
I can't think of a time where a CEO has come out and condemned the actions of a player at their club, let alone the captain.
Mm.
So when Justin Reeves says, as our captain, we expect more from him, he let himself and the club down. That's significant because 9 3/4 times out of 10, Del, the CEO will do everything that they can to shield their player. And
of
even
course.
You think back to the Andrew Gaff incident, and I'm not comparing the two for a second, so save your breath there. But even the West Coast Eagles at that stage wrapped their arms around Andrew and said, look, it was an unfortunate incident, out of character, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
For a club CEO, and I don't disagree with him, by the way, but for a club CEO to come out and say that, that just shows that that's an individual choice to do what Ben did on Friday
of
night.
Course.
That's not a club position or a club plan going in.
No, I completely agree. I actually like those comments because it makes a stand for what they accept at their football club.
Yep.
But I would not be worried that they won't be supporting Ben internally. And I've used this quote quite a few times in regards to Ross Lyon. Challenge the behaviours. Behaviours weren't great. We call it out. Support the person. Put your arms around him internally. If he has a week off, get him ready for a fortnight's time.
That'll all play out this afternoon and into tomorrow as well with the tribunal. Sonny Walters is an absolute A-grade and an absolute lock to be an All-Australian this year. Stop or go?
Stop.
And he's
stop. What a jet. Now, what's his best position? I think ideally they'd love to have him in the forward line. I think he can have more impact on games as a genuine... He can play a key forward role as a small forward, a bit like Toby Green. They can kick it to him. He's an option going forward opposed to kicking it to Hogan and a few of the talls all the time. I think he creates nightmare sort of... matchups for the opposition. Do you go tall? Do you go small? Because he can do quite a few things. He's a lock for All Australian. He's just
has to be.
And the beauty of him,
he's a match winner.
We've touched on skills already. Thank you, Michael Walters, for using the football in a manner that it should be used. It is gold.
There it is. We're back to skills.
It's a gold. It is so hard to get the football in a game. Why not try and keep it and kick it to someone wearing the same coloured jumper? I'm coming back at you. I'm going to give you 5 names.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Walters, I'm saying, is a lock for All Australian right here, right now.
In.
Max Gawn.
In. Ahead of Brody Grundy.
You've got him ahead of Brody Grundy?
Yep.
Okay.
That's just my view. I don't think that'll be the common view.
No, please call us and message
tell
in.
Tell me how much
that was Jack Heverin.
Bald-headed flog I am.
Brad Hill. right here, right now. It's Brad Hill, All Australian.
As a winger, as a genuine winger, I'd have to say yes if I was picking a mid-year team.
And he can't play anywhere else. He's only
winger. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yep. Gary Ablett.
Yes, absolutely.
Where?
Forward pocket.
Nice. Ben Cunnington.
He and Cripps, in my view, and possibly Clayton Oliver to a lesser extent, but he's been a bit inconsistent. He and Cripps are the two inside midfield stars.
Yes.
And if you're picking a team, an All-Australian team that reflects an actual football team, not a fantasy pie-in-the-sky team,
yep,
then you've got to have inside and outside mids. So, yes.
So can you have Cripps and Cunnington?
Absolutely.
Cunnington on the bench.
Yeah,
Cripps
probably.
Starts. Okay.
Yeah.
Last one, Matty DeBoer. Is there space in an All-Australian team? Well, no, we've spoken far too much about taggers, but I had him down. Would you have Matty DeBoer as the number one tagger in the comp? And I don't know if he's been beaten.
I think Fife might have done okay against him a few weeks ago, off the top of my head. I'm going to say no, but I think it's this ongoing conversation of whether there should be a tagger in the All-Australian team. And as I just said, if it's a reflection of what a proper football team looks like, then there should be a role for that type of player, yes.
Well answered.
But I'm going to say that he's probably not in there. More with Dell after this, and I might actually try and get him to go on something. I reckon I know a couple of things that'll push his buttons and he'll go past. More on Afternoons very shortly. It's the Subway lunch hour here on Afternoons. Head to Subway and try the new hot grilled paninis. Jack Heveron filling in for Andy Ma for the first couple of days of this week. Nick Del Santo is with me. Next hour, we're going to talk about the players that have surprised you. We're at this halfway mark of the year. It's a good chance to have a bit of a stock take on a few certain things, and we're going to do that this week. But after 1 o'clock, I want to talk about the players that have surprised you that you just didn't think that they were capable of doing what they have done. We'll touch on that very shortly. I've got a couple in mind for you, Dal. We'll also go over to the States and have a chat to Duncan McKenzie McCarg. He's over there at the US Open, and we'll talk cricket with Trent Copeland next hour as well. Stop and go, Dal Santo, Nicholas. There's a mistake with the bookies. Stop and go because Melbourne are favourites to beat Fremantle at the MCG on Saturday.
Quick stop. Pit stop.
Drive-through sort of stuff.
So Melbourne's sitting in 16th position with a handful of wins. And Freo, in my opinion, are the surprise packet form team of the competition in regards to what they're able to do based on our expectations. They rolled the Pies there a fortnight ago. Good value. Very good value. I don't know how the D's, and it's not their fault, but how the bookies can have the D's in front of the Dockers after they've proven they can play there against arguably one of the best teams, being the Pies. Doesn't make sense to me.
I'm not sure how Melbourne are favourites to beat anyone other than Gold Coast and Carlton at this point.
They're the only ones they're above as it currently stands.
It's hard to work out that one.
No, that might be a mistake.
I think so.
That might be a mistake.
I think so. Mitch McGovern, as good as Carlton were on the weekend, Mitch McGovern is not going that well. 6 disposals and a goal. Are they A, too top heavy, and B, do they need to send Mitch back to the next level to find some form?
Let's have a little pit stop, because there would be one I'd like to say go to at some stage. I think he's still trying to find his role. I'd love to see him.
What is that?
Well, I'd love to see him in the Tom Lynch role. That's where I see his possibilities. They've got 3 tools. The other 2 tools in Curnow and Mackay are doing a much better job, more consistent. He's doing a little bit of everything. Sometimes he's there for the switch kick across the halfback flank. Sometimes he's up the ground trying to present. I'd love to see him become the link man. Now, within that, you need to be given that opportunity, the space and the structure in front of you to be able to lead up into. He's not a massive contested pack mark. I'd like to see him more on his bike. Get up the ground, come back, and therefore free up the forward line for the other two in particular. His form hasn't been good. The only asterisk I'll put to that is when the ball movement isn't good, it's hard to be a forward no matter who you are.
Yeah.
And I know there's, I mean, Curnow's kicked 7 on the weekend and Mackay's had some really good games, but consistently it's a tough world as a forward when the mids aren't getting it done.
There is something to be said for the way Carlton in the last couple of weeks, and that's not a shot at Brendan Bolton, but have started to move the ball.
Yep.
You've got this blue chip forward in Charlie Curnow and probably another one in Harry Mackay. It's amazing what they can do when they can go one-on-one inside 50, especially against a Bulldogs team who are light down back.
Yes.
That was just noticeable on the weekend that the decision was get it in quick and get it in long and give Charlie and Harry some room to work.
And they need to work together as well when you've got the 3 tools to give each other the space. You know, you don't necessarily want them jumping at the same pack. I mean, it's going to happen every now and then, particularly on slow play. But you'd back in Curnow one-on-one. I mean, he might win 50% of them. That means he's having five shots on goal every 10 inside 50s. You do the same with Mackay. McGovern, not so much, but if he's up the ground a little bit more, then you get those opportunities. So I feel like the balance needs to be learned and work together a little bit more.
So would you send him back?
No.
You keep him in
and
learn?
It's a work in progress. I mean, this season is clearly done. Another 11 or 12 games this year for them. Is that right? About 10 or 11 games, whatever it is.
Yep.
That's another 11 games of experience to work together. Now, you need to make sure that you're going to get something out of those games. But if you can go into next preseason with an understanding of how each other plays, and it takes a period of time. It doesn't just click straight away. That's rare. That I'd be comfortable with that. I mean, him going back, what's it going to prove? That he gets a bit more form? You know what you're going to get from him. Unfortunately, at this stage, it's not a lot. But that's footy. This thing could build over the next couple of years being the Blues, and we look back and go, I'm glad they worked together for 11 weeks. Now I can see why they did that.
More with Nick Del Santo to finish off the hour. On the other side of the break, Del's part of our AFL Nation team, of course, that is powered by 100% electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Make the switch today. I made the switch.
How was it?
Switched over to Red Energy. Got a $50 JB Hi-Fi card.
You're all about free stuff.
Look at that.
You've always been like, you probably put on your Instagram.
Anyone but you. More to come.
Michael Walton.
Yeah, he was handy. I thought he was really handy.
He was handy.
Well, imagine if he was really good. He had to kick 15, did he? That's a real
How
Ross.
How was he handy?
That's a real Ross answer, isn't it? He was handy.
Ross Lyon talking about Michael Walters after his match-winning performance on Saturday.
For the third week in a row.
And Damien Barrett has written on the AFL website as well an article today. Move over Lenny. Ross finally has a new favourite. Now, your name gets a mention in there. Joey Montagna gets a name mentioned. But no one loved Lenny as much as Ross did.
Correct.
Possibly not even Lenny's partner.
Well, Lenny's one of the most modest people you'll ever meet and never spoke about himself. So he used to actually get very embarrassed, you know, even in team meetings. But Ross's word for Lenny was enormous. So Lenny would have a huge game and perform really well.
And what was he? Enormous. Carry the R.
And we used to always, and for 10, 15 years, we always sat in the exact same seats in the theatreette. And he'd always ask on a Monday morning, you know, is Lenny here? Where's Lenny? And Lenny very modestly, you know, just put his hand up in the air, not wanting to be singled out.
Where's Lenny?
And he was always in the front row as the leadership group. We always had to sit in the front row. And a few of us would get little pats on the back along the way. And I thought you were good and have clips, you know, from the game on the weekend. But Lenny was always enormous. And we love you, Lenny. So to say that Michael Walters has passed Lenny, It's a stretch, but the last 3 weeks of Michael Walters has been enormous.
Yeah, absolutely. It has. Could you do an hour, if you were doing a charity speaking gig, of course,
yes,
if the ATO are listening.
With some folding.
Just a small envelope.
Yep.
Could you do an hour just on Ross?
Impersonating
Seriously?
Ross?
No, impersonating and telling Ross stories.
You could tell stories for an hour.
Yep.
Easily. Yeah, quite comfortably. He's one of those characters, and I still watch his presses just for the amusement factor,
His presses are must-watch.
They're entertaining. He gives a bit back on the way. He'll pose questions to the journos, which I like. That's all part of the theatre as well. They're going well, though, the Dockers. Going real well.
I'm
going
to start next hour, just before I let you go, with players that have surprised you in 2019 that have played roles or done things that you didn't think that they were capable of. Have you got one to start us off?
Oh, I think that the easy one is Sam Walsh, you know, for a first year coming in.
Yeah.
You know, but it's hard to base on, you know, what do you base it off? But as I said earlier in the show, I don't think there's been a better time to come into the competition as a youngster that's talented and can run, but also as a good midfielder.
That's how we're going to start next hour. 1-300-736-736. The players that have surprised you that you didn't see it coming with their first half of the season. Del, always fun with you. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Look forward to it, Jack.
Nick Del Santo joining us on Afternoons. We start next hour with your calls. 1-300-736-736.